investigative journalist Molly Barrows. For years, I've covered the stories that made headlines in Northwest Florida and all along the Gulf Coast. Murders. Missing persons. And mysteries of all kinds. These cases are far from over for many victims, because the full story has yet to surface. Join me for Gulf Coast Confidential, where I dive into the saltier side of the South and expose the lies, greed, and corruption that often weighs down the truth. It's time to turn the tide and get a shot at justice. Hey, everybody, I'm Molly Barrows, and welcome to the Gulf Coast Confidential podcast, where we cover some of the most scandalous crimes and cases that bubble up right here in Northwest Florida and well beyond. And joining me, as usual, to talk about some of these what-the-feezy-type cases, as we call them, is Pam Hill. She's a pharmacist and advocate for victims because she herself has experienced violent crime in her own family. And this episode is an interesting one. It's called Amicide, with friends like Annette Harvey, Who Needs Enemies? Pam, I didn't even know what amicide meant until we started doing this episode.
Yeah, it means killing your friend, you know, and I guess there's more cases of this than we know. We've talked about suicide, you know, faking your own death, and then we've got homicide and suicide and
matricide and patricide.
Mm-hmm, those things. And it is, you know, it makes me sad to think that anybody kills anybody, you know, and that we even have a name for it. It just makes me so sad.
I know. And for those who aren't familiar, here's a little recap. This month, a jury found 54-year-old Annette Harvey guilty of premeditated first-degree murder, commission of a felony, and especially aggravated burglary in the 2021 stabbing death of 50-year-old Robin Leonard. This case happened in Tennessee. Leonard was a professor, in fact, at East Tennessee State University in the Department of Psychology. And police say they found her with numerous stab wounds on January 18th of 2021. She died 11 days later due to her injuries. And it turns out that Harvey and Leonard had been friends since they were kids. And Leonard had actually taken in Harvey's children after Harvey had a mental breakdown. And police believe that's the motive, that basically Harvey became angry with Leonard because she had custody of her kids and wanted to kill her. So that's what she did. Mm. And it's absolutely heartbreaking. I mean, here's somebody trying to do the right thing, trying to help out a friend, and becomes the target of this woman.
Yeah, it is sad. They were good friends. Annette Harvey was a little more plain and, I guess, wholesomey looking. And like I said, every time I'd look at her, I'd hear the background noise of "I'm proud to be a coal miner's daughter" in the back of my head.
Right.
Because she's a little lady that looked kind of plain and nondescript. And then you got Robin Leonard. She's a professor. She had a little more happening haircut and a big, pretty smile and tan. And she's a little fuller figured. And you just knew that she liked to have fun, but they had said they both liked to have fun. They enjoyed each other so much. Now, they drank and partied a lot, and they smoked marijuana and all that kind of stuff, which is going to come up later, but they enjoyed each other.
And none of that's illegal, really.
No, but I mean, and
well, federally, marijuana, but if we're going to get on that subject, but it is legal in a lot of states. Yeah. So, but to that point, a lot of friends do relax that way.
Right. They were enjoying each other's company. Well, something had happened. Annette had several breaks from reality in the past. She was easy to believe stuff. And she at one point thought that her husband, I think his name's Mike Slattery or something, and I watched him testify on TV. And he's a nice looking man, a kind of a mild mannered man. And he loved her. He said, "This is my wife forever."
And well, she accused him of being a cult leader,
she
right?
She did, and a pervert, and selling and trafficking little girls, and all kind of stuff. And she even said, "If something happens to me, you better look at Mike Slattery."
Now, and this was proven not to be true. This was just something she believed in her own mind.
Right, it's what she believed. And so she had told her friend, Robin, all this stuff. And Robin believed that that's what she believed, you know. So basically, and then Annette kept saying all that kind of stuff to other people, along with other things that she would say. And so she got her kids taken away from her. So her friend basically took her kids in, and her kids liked being with Robin, because she was dependable. She was not saying stuff that was out
there. She was normal.
Right, exactly. And then, like, even the kids, when they would be, if their mom, Annette, would step out, they're like, "Don't leave me with her, don't leave me with her." So basically, she was doing her such a favor. And Robin's son, he was, I think, a teenager then, he did not want his mom to get in the middle of this. But she was a psychologist. She wasn't practicing psychology on her friend because you're just too close. But she was just trying to help her.
Right. That's interesting that her son thought that something was amiss.
Right. He just didn't want that. He enjoyed his home with his mother. He said, when he testified, I just was like, this boy loved his mother. He said his mother was a waitress for 17 years, a single mom, till she could get her education and become a professor at this university or junior college there where they lived in East Tennessee, I think. And he was so proud of her. And so he knew it was them. You and me, my mom and me, against the world. And he said one of the last things he remembers with his mom was going to get a hot fudge sundae with her. So, I mean, this is just so sweet and wholesome, but it's terrible what happened.
I know, and it's so unnecessary. It was interesting to me that Harvey's defense attorney, they tried to claim not guilty by reason of insanity, saying she didn't have the intent to kill, she didn't know what she was doing. And I pulled a quote from what he was saying, quote, Annette Harvey did not have the soundness of mind to think her way into the commission of a crime, is what the attorney told the jury, end quote. And the defense also painted her life story as complex and traumatic. Mm-hmm. They reinforced what she was saying about the husband. Apparently, she lived with him in New Jersey, which is probably another reason why Robin Leonard didn't really have any reason not to believe her. Mm-hmm. She could make things up because she lived in another state at the time this terrible thing was supposedly happening with the ex-alleged religious cult leader that was her ex-husband that we now know is not true. But the defense is basically trying to paint her as a victim.
Right.
And this is the stress that caused her to behave like she did or have the mental issues that she did. So in the midst of all this turmoil, though, she reconnects with Leonard, like you were talking about. They'd been friends since they were kids, she testified. But in the days leading up to the stabbing, she said there had been more and more tension building because Leonard was granted temporary custody of Harvey's children. She didn't like it. And she basically said that she'd had episodes previously, like you talked about, with her mental illness, where she had feelings of paranoia, that people were coming after her. And she said it was after one of these experiences that her kids were taken away from her. She was taken for evaluation. Leonard took in her kids. And the longer they were gone, the more she began to worry and wanted to confront Leonard and started thinking about killing her, essentially. And she said she didn't claim she knew what happened until she was put back on medication in the jail. And the prosecution's like, ixnay on that. Yeah. We're not buying that. Because also they said that Harvey's two young children moved to another home because Harvey had actually taken them away from Leonard 2 days earlier. So police found the kids with Harvey in Bristol, Tennessee. She'd taken off with them, returned them back to Leonard, and it just continued to build from there. So instead of bringing them back to her home, actually Leonard was put him somewhere else because she was concerned that Harvey was going to come after him again. And that's when police say the next morning Harvey showed up at Leonard's house with a knife. Johnson City police said that they showed up not long after that because there was a 911 call, and this also came out in trial. Responding officers got to Leonard's house, and they found blood on the porch. They found a baseball bat covered in blood, furniture strewn about the house. Harvey's purse and other things were just in a mess, and there were no signs of forced entry, but blood throughout the house and obviously what appeared to be a struggle that had taken place. A fence on the property had even been hit by a car. There were tire tracks. Pieces of the vehicle were found. And going back to that 911 call, investigators say that Harvey called police to report that she'd been hit in the head with a bat. But it was during this call that basically Leonard was saying, Harvey stabbed me. Mm-hmm. And then she cut her off, hung up the phone, so she couldn't do it. So that came out, of course. That's a pretty strong piece of evidence.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And she survived long enough, too, that when police got there and help got there, she told them, yes, Annette Harvey is the one who stabbed me, and then she died 11 days later.
Yeah. Before that little fracas and episode right there, Annette Harvey, with her delusions and her voices and the things she heard, she had gone. See, she just couldn't stay somewhere. She just had to always get someone to help her with stuff. And she was a sweet little lady, and people wanted to help her. And she's a little church lady. She had actually gone to her preacher, too. And her preacher, she said, Pastor so-and-so, you got to help me. And when she's up in New Jersey, he said, well, the church ladies help you. So she came down on that prayer. And I mean, they can't just stop everything in the world because she's the one that keeps getting into chaos and keeps doing all this stuff and not acting right. But so that is why that couple, when she went to the pastor's house, he basically told her, get out of here. You know, and so the cab driver kind of had mercy on her and took her somewhere. So then after that is when all this stuff started. She's building up resentment toward Robin because Robin kind of had her life together. Mm-hmm. But Annette, the reason they were looking at NGI, not guilty by reason of insanity, was that there you go with this stuff. And then, but with NGI, you have to admit that you did the crime. So they thought, nah, we're not even going to do that. We're going to go with diminished health capacity. Mental capacity, DMC, because you don't have to admit it there. So this is what, I watched this trial, and I watched this happen, and I watched the lady sitting up there, Annette, the killer, watched her sitting up there with totally, like, gray hair, kind of messy, and she's always looking down. She's never smiling. She shouldn't be smiling, but she's, her affect is so absent or not there, and I'm just, she's hearing all the horrible stuff she did. She stabbed her friend in the back 8 times, and, you know, the lady's running away from her, and she's
and
hearing
in the front, too.
Yeah,
I think she got some in the front. 15 mm-hmm. wounds.
Yeah, she got some in the front, but to me, it's especially cowardly when mm-hmm. you do something to someone in their back, mm-hmm. you know, because she wasn't hurting her then.
Why was the car in the yard?
That was Annette's car. And I think she had gone out there. I think what she had done is Robin kept a baseball bat in her house as protection. I don't think she had a gun.
I know a lot of people that do that or some kind of a stick or weapon mm-hmm. under a bed or under the seat
same.
Of the car.
I know lots of people that do that. And so she comes in there and she must be getting rowdy with Robin. And so I don't think Robin hurts or anything, but I think she probably picks it up because she sees how she's coming. Mm-hmm. Well, she must stab her and everything and then get out because then she said, I had to run back in the house and get my purse and keys. And then she act like that's Robin's fault. She said, I was scared. I had to go back in. You just stabbed her to almost death, you know, but she went back in there to get her keys. And then I think she hit that fence on the way out. Anyway, it's always chaos where this lady is, where her friend Robin is. It's calm. The lady's trying to live a normal life, not this life of
worked hard to have a normal life.
Exactly. And not all this
and build
stuff
the life she had
right, going around in her head. So here she is, she's sitting there, and then I watch this, and I go, okay, she's playing to that, like she's got diminished capacity. And I watched her walk up to the stand. She's not, they're 50, you know, she's kind of limping up there. She's got on like almost like a flour sack dress.
I think she's about, 54?
Yeah, they're mid-50s. Just, yeah, they're not old. And so, I mean, all that's going on. And I'm watching her, and then I'm watching everything her attorney turns it around to making it almost like it's Robin's fault that she should have let her. You got two effed up women, okay? They both are partying and drinking and having this kind of fun. Well, Annette goes, look, only thing messed me up is marijuana. She said, all I need is my niacin. I need good food, and I need to stay away from the MJ, the Mary Jane. And so that's what she's saying. That's what Annette's saying, the killer's saying. And then she basically said that she and Robin would ask back and forth, are you going to bring me flowers or get me flowers? That was their code word for marijuana, mm-hmm. that they wanted that. So she said, we got each other flowers. And then at some point she had said that when she went in the house, Robin could see she was distressed. So she said, Robin gave me a big old, like, and she made a face and said, bear hug. Well, bear hug to me sounds good if you're hurting or whatever like that. But then she was quick to shake that off and go, you know, like a wrestler. Type of thing. So you can tell this lady has been told what to say. She doesn't say very much, but this is this tired, old, sappy, I'm so pitiful thing. And Robin's over there just living her best life. And I guess she should be punished because she's not hearing things, or she's not, you know, people that are hearing things, you do not know what they're hearing. And they start doing command voices and doing what they're supposed to do. Like she said that about her husband. You know, she thought that he was hurting little girls, her little girl. That's why she wanted the girls back from Robin. She was going to take them off the grid.
That's crazy. Well, it sounds like she truly did suffer from some sort of mental illness.
She did.
But she still was aware enough to know what she was mm-hmm. doing.
Right. Well, she said when after, you know, I think she got hit in the fracas with in her trying to kill, and she did eventually kill Robin, that she was out driving around somewhere, and there was a big big deal about that, whatever she was doing. But what struck me was she said, she looked at them like they were all crazy and said, all I was doing, I was just looking for a sewing kit. I'm going to sew my head up, is what she said. Because she said, I am a seamstress.
Oh, my God.
So that is, this is what we're dealing with right here. And this poor Robin, I'm thinking, this poor lady, a waitress for 17 years at like Olive Garden and Red Lobster and this, that, and they finally got her life together, trying to help her little friend, and her friend's just trying to laugh and have a good time and blow off steam, and gets murdered in her own house from her friend that just wants to blame everybody else.
And it reminds me of that story that we did on the hairdresser that was murdered by her friend, the older woman, and retired. And then she had this couple of younger friends that, you know, this was a young woman that she had taken care of since she was young and thought she could trust her and rely on her. And then this woman decided that she was going to kill her because she knew that the hairdresser had left her in her will.
Right. Eye drop murder.
Yeah, exactly. Check out that episode, Eye Drop Murder. But yeah, I and it's a shame. But, you know, I keep thinking about that son who was like, you know, I just think my mom should have stayed out of this. And you know, it's tough when you're from the outside looking in and you have a gut feeling and you're listening to it. At least he spoke up and told her.
Yes. And he was very good about testifying. You know, because what happens a lot of times in these cases is it becomes so much about the offender because they're cutting up. They've done crazy stuff. They're killers. Everything they're doing is bigger than life. And he was not going to be shut down. He told us how wonderful his mother was. And he told us what sacrifices his mother made and what a delightful person she was and everything. And that just did something to me. It made me fall in love with Robin because I thought she's just trying to be a good friend. And look at this. She gets murdered over it.
Well, and it sounds to me like obviously the prosecution did a good job making their case because not only did the jury convict her, but they only deliberated 3 hours.
Yep. And because I thought at first, I thought with some of this stuff that we're talking about, they might say diminished capacity. But then I thought I watch the jury and I watch people testify and I watch their image and I watch what they say and do because Annette was using words that are simple like that and acting so like, well, I just don't know. And if you say so, when the lawyer would ask her something, she'd say, well, I don't remember that, but if you say so, you know, kind of thing, which is endearing to some people, but not necessarily a jury. They're like, you killed her. You better remember something, you know. So that kind of thing.
It's evasive.
But, yeah. It was just an exercise in just watching. Like I said, I kept hearing Coal Miner's Daughter, you know, just a little like just a country thing going on there.
Right. That was the formula she was trying to perpetrate, I guess, or convince them all that she was harmless, really, unless she has a knife and is jealous. Because it sounds to me like there's just a lot of jealousy and, like you said, resentment, too. But I feel like there's just some good old-fashioned jealousy right there.
I felt like that, too. And even because she said, Robin was always smarter. Robin was always strong. See, she was smart. She wasn't that, like, meek. She made sure to put that in there. But what's wrong with being strong? You're in your own house. I would hope that everybody's strong when someone's trying to hurt them.
Yeah. Well, and two, even just the way that she said, you know, I have to stay away from the MJ, that's still making excuses. You know,
exactly.
And if that's the case, but you didn't. So, you know, you still made the choice to do it. It kind of reminded me of that case that we just talked about, the cannabis-induced psychosis, where the young woman killed her boyfriend and just left a hole in his chest where his heart used to be because she said that I could not believe that even though she was found guilty of involuntary manslaughter, that the judge only gave her community service. But I think you're going to see more of that, people blaming drugs for whatever's already in them, sparking them to do what they're already capable of doing, apparently.
I think it just lights up a demon inside of them. And the thing is, here's a concept. How about don't do it?
Right, exactly. You know, take responsibility. Yeah. Just, you know, take care of yourself so you don't hurt other people or yourself.
Yeah, and that cannabis-induced psychosis and stuff, there kind of has to be something to work with in the first place.
Absolutely.
And with a person, and that is what I look like, and here's all these cases coming together. Looked at that Jennifer Crumley case. You know, she didn't herself kill anybody, but she's going to be sentenced to some years. We don't know how many yet. But this girl that that Spectre girl stabs the boy.
Bryn,
108 times. Like you said, there's no flesh left, no heart left where he was, and she does not have to serve one day in jail or prison. And the thing is, it's what people say. It's what I get this. I get this. They're like, look, their punishment can be whatever you want it to be when you bring my loved one back.
Right.
Then you can do what you want.
I know. Well, that's, I think, what was so touching about this case, too. The family was just so appreciative that they had gotten that guilty verdict in Robin Leonard's case. And her family member said, you know, because this has been 3 years coming and how hard it's been to wait. But they said that they were in it to win it because it was a testament to Robin. They wanted to fight for her because she just kept going and pushing through the challenges in her life and taking care of her family and taking care of her child. And they wanted to stand up for her no matter what. They love their sister, much like you feel about Sharon and why you continue to advocate for her and other victims of violence, because people do feel like they're not her. They do feel like they're in this exclusive club that nobody wants to be in.
Right, right. A club that you just don't want membership in. But, and also people don't say their name. That's why we like to say their name, Robin Leonard, because they become the lady that got murdered, or the decedent, or the body, or the corpse, or the little lady that was a waitress, or the little lady that was a teacher. It hurts so badly for people not to say the name of your loved one. But we always seem to remember the name of the one that causes the murder or murders or kills or maims and causes all the shenanigans and chaos. We have to say their name because that's who the case is against.
Well, they'll say Annette Harvey's name on May 1st when they sentence her. It'll be interesting to see what she ends up getting. But hopefully, you know, it sounds like she doesn't need, she's a danger to society. She can justify whatever she wants to do in her own mind. She doesn't need to be out in the public.
Oh, yeah. No, she does not need to get out either because, you know, she didn't really take responsibility through all this either because they were walking that tightrope. I tell you what, the thing that I wished that never happened in our life was the not guilty by reason of insanity. I almost wish that wasn't even a defense, because especially when someone said, I did it, there should be guilty by reason of insanity. And if I could turn back time and change anything in my life, I would have fought like hell for that to never, never, never be brought up. And I think anybody that has a case where someone in their family is hurt or killed, never agree to insanity plea.
Well, and to your point, you can't really decide if somebody uses that as a defense. If they want to use it, they can, but you can push harder and fight against it if you feel like it's not right. And I mean, I think that there's a lot of overhaul that needs to be done with the American criminal justice system. I think you have to be crazy regardless when you kill somebody. So why do you get to have special cases of especially crazy?
Right, right.
You know, even if they were on drugs that caused them to behave badly, they chose to do those drugs.
Right.
They were aware that potentially something could happen. And then in some cases, they say they weren't aware that something could happen, like in the case of Bryn Spector. But at any rate, I do feel like you're right. Anybody's got some mental problems if they're going to kill someone.
Yeah.
It's just when do we decide, okay, well, this isn't a mental disorder that qualifies for not guilty by reason of insanity, but this one does.
Right.
And then you have these varying punishments.
Like,
for instance, Brandon ate a lot, is already being recommended for release into a group home. So one of the most violent ways you can kill somebody, did it to his own mother on Christmas Eve, and he's going to be out potentially. And then you've got Jennifer Crumbly, who didn't ever pull the trigger. Her son, Ethan Crumbly, pulled the trigger, killed four people and injured many others at his high school. She was basically found culpable in that because she ignored warning signs, according to the prosecution and the jury. She's going to be facing more time than somebody like Brandon ever will. So in this case, Harvey faces a life sentence, and frankly, you know, I hope she gets it. I hate it for her children. I hate that she made the decision, but the bottom line is she took a life. And Robin Leonard's family will never be the same, and the life that she led is forever over.
Right.
So if she is going to still be here, then she needs to pay that penalty and spend the rest of her life behind bars, in my opinion.
Right. Well, that's how I feel too. And basically, that was her friend.
I know.
You killed your friend.
Well, Pam, thank you so much. I appreciate you joining us for this conversation.
Thank you.
And that is it for Amicide with friends like Annette Harvey, Who Needs Enemies. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Gulf Coast Confidential. I'm your host, writer, and producer, Molly Barrows, with co-host and researcher, Pam Hill. And as always, a big thanks to director, editor, and production engineer, James Roy. You can listen to more of these conversations wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. You can also watch on the Gulf Coast Confidential YouTube channel. But don't forget to like and subscribe, right?
Subscribe.
And we'll see you next time. Thanks for joining us.